What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code. A lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant. AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hi!
Hello, blurring.
I don't understand what you're trying to say, but if it's because of my apartment has bad lighting,
no,
whatever, man.
I was trying to do like Shireen, but I just said blurring. Because, you know, people always mess up your name, so I was just trying
to
go too hard. What if someone's you're
a
like,
very
and
hard turn.
I'm Shireen, and they're like, oh, yeah, nice to meet you, blurring.
I would not know how to respond to that. I would just go with it. I would be that person for the rest of my life.
I'm sorry.
It's okay, I forgive
you. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, and I'm sorry.
So Ethnically Ambiguous, we have a phenomenal episode today for y'all. You guys are going to like it.
It's a great episode.
Yeah. Derek Lemos is with us today. We talk about politics. We talk about his journey into the performance world, how that got started, his family, his podcast, Mansplain Yourself, and so much more. It is a delight.
He's from the desert. And stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi. Hi.
Are we the same person?
I mean, at this point, people haven't seen us in the same room in quite some time.
I know. I do both voices. Your face.
I thought you were going to impersonate me at first, and I was like, will she dare? Because sometimes I get really self-conscious.
I'm Shireen. I'm trying to make the worst voice possible. Hello.
Oh my God, you have to stop right now. I don't really think
that's what you sound like.
I know. But I will say, I get very self-conscious about people mimicking me.
Can I do my impression of you?
Okay.
Did I do that?
Thank you.
I'm just joking. That's Urkel.
Really? Oh, is that what the impression was?
I'm sorry.
I get very self-conscious about people mimicking my voice. I've said this before on this podcast. I've been self-conscious about my voice for most of my life, but like my older sister has a higher pitched voice than me, but we sound similar. So every time she would impersonate me, she'd like make it way too low, like I'm Shireen. And that made me feel very self-conscious. And then in college, someone told me one of my best friends told me I sounded like a Muppet. And then I got very self-conscious about that. And then someone on a podcast I was a guest on commented that I always sound like I'm about to cry.
This is escalating.
Sorry.
I like it.
It's just everyone. Let's get into it. I mean, there's some stuff there.
That velvety voice that you just heard is our guest for today, by the way. Spoiler alert. This is someone we've been trying to get on the pod for a minute in the beginning of this year. And then shit went down, as you may or may not know. And here we are, finally, long road, but I'm glad that we're finally connecting. It's I should have. Ah, oh, fuck me. I don't know
what
how
are
to
you
say,
gonna get wrong here. It's pretty.
I could say his last name wrong. Like his last name wrong.
It sounds exactly like it's spelled. Like you Lemos. Think it looks. That's probably yeah.
Lima. Okay. Lemos. Fuck yes.
Because it looks like lemons. Boom. Lemos.
Okay. I don't. You never know. I always say everything.
No,
wrong.
You don't. I mean, that's very considerate of you. That's very sweet of you.
Derek.
Lemos.
Lemos.
There
you go. Lemos.
Lemos. Lemos. Lemos or Lemos.
Lemos. So think Lemos. when life gives you Lemos.
Ooh, I like that.
I do like that.
Yeah, when I when I finally get off my ass and record my comedy special, that's what it's going to be called.
Oh, I love it.
Hell yeah.
When life gives you Derek Lemos. God,
Limon.
I overthink everything. And so by the time I land on the right pronunciation, I convince myself it's wrong in my head. Mm. I'm like, it's, I don't know. Does that make sense? I don't.
Whatever. Oh, totally. Totally.
But we're very happy to have you here.
We are. Long time coming.
I'm very happy to be here with the very famous Elizabeth Holmes.
Excuse me? Is that a dig to my turtleneck?
No, you were talking about your voice earlier and people making fun of you. So I was making fun of you.
I also made the I am wearing a turtleneck right now.
I'm Elizabeth Holmes. That's what you sound like.
Personally.
I mean, she scammed a bunch of rich dudes out of a lot of money. So, I mean,
Jamie Loftus's impression of her is impeccable, in my opinion. Yeah. She makes, it's not a direct impersonation of Holmes, but it's basically the character that she does based off of her.
She's cornered the girl boss market in the perfect way. Girl boss parody market, if you will.
Yeah.
She's not a girl. She's not a terrible girl boss, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Lord help us.
Lord help us. I'm really hoping girl boss trend actually... As much as I'm glad we have a woman in the White House, I think girl boss is going to exist for a very long time.
That's the unfortunate thing is, while we do have a woman of color who's going to be our first ever vice president woman of color, just any woman of color in the White House biz, in one of the positions, not including, first wife,
Michelle Obama. Yeah.
She is the queen of pantsuit nation.
Exactly. It's so much progress being made in her position. Her shortcomings aside, she's had an incredible rise to this position. That's undeniable.
Oh, absolutely. I think the real mark of progress is when we can have a female Bernie Sanders just schleppy and just showing up, just yelling at people. And it's here's how it's gotta be done.
Exactly.
I love it.
I am waiting for that. I'm really hoping AOC is not just a pipe dream president for me. I really want her to be president.
If we want AOC to be president, we have to destroy the DNC, because the DNC will fucking do everything they can to keep AOC down, because these establishment Democrats, these motherfuckers,
they ruin everything.
They just get it. Nancy Pelosi, you dumb bitch, you don't get it. You don't get it. Stop using people of color as fucking symbols for your magazine covers, you dumb bitch. Sorry, I had to say it. She is also in Pantsuit Nation.
I think that's where a lot of, at least myself, I get frustrated with other liberals. They're starting to point out those kinds of hypocrisies from other Democrats. You guys need to do better. It's like, they know better. Mm-hmm. They just don't give a fuck.
No, it's all about money.
That's the real conversation I think we need to be having more frequently, is reminding people. These are people who have been in politics for decades, who have made their money, who have their connections, who are so far removed from what you and I experience on a day-to-day level. They don't get it and they don't want to.
Yeah.
And they want to hold on to their money.
Mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders, I mean, I'm going to be a supporter of his for the end of time. He's the sole person in politics, other than now AOC, in my opinion, and a couple of other people of color that have had the same values their entire political career, and to their detriment in a way.
Mm-hmm.
If he had bent a little bit more than he did, maybe he would have gotten further. But his commitment to his values, I think, is more commendable than that. The way that Democrats in particular operated, not even just this year, but 4 years ago, really was so disappointing to me. I don't really understand how many people still support Elizabeth Warren after the shit she pulled. You know what I mean? I will never get over that. And there are so many issues I have with Warren, but the fact that she, for a while after Bernie Sanders, she was like the most powerful person in the nation for like a week. And she squandered that.
Yeah, she sat on it.
She bamboozled us.
And instead, she showed up on SNL. And it was just so telling. Like, there are so many liberals that when she showed up on SNL with Kate McKinnon, they were like, my moms. And I was like, no. Like, you're missing the whole point. Anyway, I'm just... This is obviously an issue I've been thinking about for a long time.
We've learned one thing about the DNC, and they are really just a money laundering organization at this point. They just want money. The DNC and establishment Democrats are capitalists until the day they die. They don't give a shit about your middle class. They don't give a shit about anyone. They don't give a shit about people of color. They just want control so they can keep making more money, keep wearing their pantsuits, and then keep posing side by side like, we did it. We saved the country.
Yeah, I loved like over the last 4 years, they would use like whatever was trending on Twitter to send me a fucking email asking me for money. Yeah. Like, we need to stop Trump. Okay, then actually do it. Like,
yeah, you have the power to do so much more.
Yeah, it goes from the federal government down, like Gavin Newsom and fucking Eric Garcetti.
Oh my God.
You know, these kind of like...
showboaty, like just... very performative politicians. Yeah.
Yeah, that like, oh, we wish we could. We have to protect winners and we have to protect people of marginalized people. Then fucking do it. You're saying it like you're not somebody in a position of authority.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't want to just like hate on Elizabeth Warren for too much, but I think she's a good example of a white person capitalizing on people of color in a very sinister way. Like the excuse that she didn't know any better to not fucking... literally take the place of a woman of color for a lot of her career and try to pass off as that and then be like, I didn't know. Like, no, you, if you're as smart as everyone says you are, if you're as smart as like we want to believe you are, you knew.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of politicians do that, but the way she did it, in my opinion, is unforgivable and very sinister. If she actually cared about people of color in the way that we want her to in the progressive movement, she not only would not have doubled down in her ignorance, but she would do something else to actually help the indigenous community in a way that isn't performative. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, no, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
We can kind of analyze all day about what she thought, you know, and what she was told growing up or whatever, and how many white people think they're quarter Cherokee or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny to me, I just like, it's brief sidetrack, how like of all... the hundreds of tribal nations, 80% of white people come from the Cherokee Nation.
It's the only name they remember.
The only one they remember,
Yeah. It's because it's a brand. That's
but it's like, yeah, we can talk about like her reasoning all day behind it, but it's like, okay, you fucked up. Everybody knows that you fucked up now. The apology is nice, but that's like baseline. That's like minimum. Yeah. So that's like what comes next. Now that you are aware, your actions have to follow that awareness.
Yeah, 100%. And I think if anyone's done any like self work or even gone to therapy or like learned about what a real apology actually means, a big part of actually being sorry is fixing your behavior and atoning in a way that is like actionable change. And without that, the apology is empty and it should be regarded as empty. And so I think we should just expect more of our progressive leaders, and the majority of them are not as progressive as we want to believe they are.
But didn't you know that criticizing Democrats equals support for Trump? Didn't you know that?
That makes me so, that whole, yeah, I mean, that's a whole another thorn in my side kind of thing. And I'm sure with everybody, but.
And I do want to take this time to acknowledge that Kamala Harris should acknowledge, I'm acknowledging that she should acknowledge the very high caste that she's from in the Indian community that enslaves others. Just saying. If you're going to rock that Indian heritage, at least acknowledge your privilege within that Indian heritage, because it's wild. I've read a lot. They're called the Brahmin community, and they're from mostly Tamil Nadu. And that caste, they're like one of the highest Indian castes, and they are linked to a lot of not great behavior and poor treatment of poorer castes. So I don't know about you, but I mean, I've noticed that she doesn't acknowledge it, but I think you should, because I think it would say a lot about her if she did acknowledge it and did acknowledge her privilege in that situation. You got to talk about these things.
Especially if she wants to be seen as somebody who like is taking accountability for their past mistakes.
And she has a good number of them, to be honest.
Like, yeah, which she doesn't really.
At the same time, I think, Anna, you tweeted something in reference to this, I think about Barack Obama, but as a person of color, especially as a woman of color, to get ahead, you have to make some moral sacrifices, especially in politics. Yeah. And I can never understand how hard that must be, because mm-hmm. she has been a pioneer for a lot of communities, whether like a child of immigrants, South Asian descent, Black descent, even as a senator. And she's young. Like, I'm excited about someone that young being a vice president, because I've wanted a young person in the White House for so long. But it's really, I think, unfortunate how many moral sacrifices you have to make to get ahead, especially in politics, especially as a woman, especially as a person of color, because I really value the pivotal moment that she presents. Like, again, children of immigrants, Black and then South Asian, let alone a woman. Like, you know, like there are so many amazing things she's accomplished in a very short amount of time. Her career is not that long in comparison to like Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
I tried to look at her Instagram and an ad started playing and it startled the shit out of me. Just now, you may have heard it go off. I was trying to be like, what has she been posting? But I got an ad on her Instagram. I don't know what the fuck's going on.
Yeah.
Was it just a celebratory, like, hey, thanks
it may have been
for putting us in the White House?
Yeah, it may have been a video, but it startled me. Like, I wasn't expecting it, and I'm a little scared to go back to her Instagram. Yeah.
Or was it, you know, Tom Perez asking you for more money?
That's probably what it was.
Yeah. So we won the White House, but there's so much more work to do.
Yeah.
But to, like, talk about your point, Shireen, like, obviously, I am cisgendered male. So, like, I am speaking with a lot of privilege here, and I acknowledge that. But like the idea of having to make concessions to like get ahead, it kind of, I'm looking at like Shirley Chisholm, for example.
100%.
Who like didn't necessarily compromise in a lot of ways. Like she was very staunchly like pro-labor and had a lot of progressive ideas back in the, you know, been like in the 70s when she ran. And again, DNC did everything that they could to kind of like hold her back.
Yeah. I mean, she's an example of it being possible to not lose yourself.
To me, it feels like, how easily do you want your career path to be?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, it's a lot fucking harder to, like you said, be morally steadfast in the things that you believe. But it's a lot easier to make those kinds of concessions and take that corporate money or to take those kinds of deals and, like, it just makes me curious about that individual.
Their moral compass.
You got to where you were, but at what cost?
Yeah. And I think what kind of bothers me, even with some of my friends, is that they boil it down to like, no politician is perfect. Like, this is just how politics is. And I don't want that to be what politics is. That shouldn't be what politics is.
Yeah.
And I think we shouldn't accept imperfect.
Yeah, we shouldn't resign ourselves to that.
I don't like that ultimate conclusion of, well, that's what the game is, because it shouldn't like it should be much more than that. But her career path is truly amazing. She was only the second African-American woman ever in the U.S. Senate and the first of South Asian descent. And the fact that she's already the VP at like 56, like it's incredible. But the concessions to get there. And maybe Anna's point about coming from privilege, maybe that has to do with it, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that plays a big role in coming from privilege, despite being a person of color, you can still be privileged in that community as well. But then maybe being out of touch, for lack of a better phrase, to the people that you want to help. But I didn't mean to talk about politics for so long, but it is really refreshing to talk about it on the show.
I mean, this is what gets me off, so like...
Hell yeah. That's good to hear.
I honestly, I love having these kinds of discussions because it really is, it's the complete framework for the types of things that we ideally want to change.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you're exactly right. We shouldn't, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
Why? Why can't we have better?
Mm-hmm.
And I think once you start down that road of shrugging your shoulders and accepting the status quo, that's why we have Democrats who aren't even public officials shit on Medicare for All or like increasing the minimum wage or having, you know, like certain labor protections, like basic fucking things that if you are on this side of the spectrum, like should support.
Yeah. 100%. And I guess the last thing I'll say about this before pivoting to something else is that I really dislike, I loathe the concept of celebrity so much. And seeing politicians become that for people, becoming people that you stan or whatever, that is really dangerous. And it's been that way for at least, I mean, I think Clinton maybe started it because like he was very well loved. But I think Barack Obama in particular became like a charismatic celebrity. He's a very charismatic person. People forget that he's a war criminal, but you know what?
Yeah.
Whatever. But I think people are doing that with Harris. I think people did that with Warren. I think it was very telling when she was on SNL that she was more interested in her image of celebrity and being well-liked versus actually helping the progressive movement. But I'm very disgusted with how celebrity has taken over every element of our lives, including politics, because we shouldn't liking our politicians as people seems to be the end goal for them versus actually helping the people that need help.
Yeah, it's like they're public servants. I mean, that should be at the forefront, I think, at all times. Like, these people are here, ideally supposed to be here to help the most marginalized among us.
Yeah.
It's like, why do we give a shit, you know, who's making a guest appearance back on Jimmy Fallon?
Exactly. And SNL's a perpetrator of that as well. Like, you know, just celebrity and politics has become so enmeshed. It's just really unfortunate to see it play out that way. Because, I mean, and a lot of my friends do it. They'll, post, something being like, oh, mom, or mom and dad for, whoever. You know what I mean? I think it's just, I don't think they're realizing they're perpetuating that societal obsession with celebrity and with the concept of celebrity and making that be the end all be all.
Yeah. But
I don't know.
Yeah. And I completely agree. It's like, we can celebrate those individual accomplishments, or we can celebrate those milestones, but it all has to be contextualized.
Exactly.
I mean, but don't you love the concept of a war criminal being a celebrity?
I mean, it is fascinating, for
sure. It's so fun. You're like, he killed babies. And then you're like, but he shot and made that three-pointer.
Oh my God. That video was,
gotta love
it. Don't even get me started on that.
It's like when Kobe died.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the entire city was deeply in mourning. And nobody wanted to bring up that awkward fact of hey, remember that thing that happened?
Made a rape accusation.
Yeah. I think there's a time and place for it. I think a lot of people were mourning, including his family, and his family found out via the news. Like, there's a whole bunch of really unfortunate things that played out with Kobe's death.
I think also because his sister, not his sister, his daughter.
Yeah.
I think there was so much. I mean, I agree. People were quick to get very upset if you brought it up, but I mean, it is a part of his history, and
it is a part of his history, and no one's without no one should be without criticism, I should say. But I also think it would be different if he died of natural causes. I should just say that. But it was a very traumatic thing that happened. Then he influenced so many people, and I think people, I mean, I'm not defending any of that, but I think there's just a time and place to be by the way, this person may have hurt someone.
I mean, in terms of celebrity status, kind of overtaking, this person's almost deified.
I understand that. Well, I, for one, enjoyed the spiel. but guess what?
Nice little warm up.
I know. Guess what? It's already time for an ad break. We'll be right back with Derek and actually maybe get to know you. Who knows?
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K. LASIK.com.
This summer, click into Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot and get after those outdoor projects with some serious cordless power from Ryobi. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. Leaves and debris are no match for the 40-volt power of the Ryobi leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Tidy up those flower beds and keep your walkways looking sharp with Ryobi's 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Yard work done and done. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. Shop now at the Home Depot or homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
And we're back with Derek.
Should we get into his life?
Yeah. Let's get into your life.
Derek, where are you
Let's
from? Where were you born? Where were you raised?
Ooh. So I was born in a suburb of Los Angeles. I was born in La Mirada, which is right next to Norwalk. Mm-hmm. So that's mostly where my family's from. I grew up out in the desert. I grew up in Palm Springs.
Oh, I didn't know that about you.
You're a SoCal kid.
Yeah, so like I had no idea, for example, like Alia Shawkat is a desert rat also. Mm. And I like lived very close to the business her father owned.
She's one of my dream guests. I want
hearing her talk about like the desert and certain things, and she was mentioning her dad's business. I was like, oh, I know that place. That's like right next to the Del Taco that I used to go to.
That's amazing.
One, I fucking hate that place.
Really?
But two, I weirdly light up when meeting somebody who is from there.
It's like a familial thing. You can be like, for example, like me and my sisters have like an intimate knowledge of like growing up together, you know, like mm-hmm. only we understand certain things. I think it's the same thing about where you like where you're from. Only that person understands like that weird bathroom at the Taco Bell or whatever it is.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, that's exactly it. Because it's been gentrified so heavily because of Coachella, like I remember because I was working at a record store like the second year that Coachella existed, and tickets were, I remember they were literally $75.
Wow.
But I remember certain things and like how the city was laid out, and there were certain touchstones that if you lived there during this very specific time period as a young person, like you knew and understood.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. And how did your family get out to Palm Springs area?
My mom was very young when she got pregnant.
Uh-huh.
And my ain't shit dad was not being a great dad. Uh-huh. Yeah, he was being ain't shit. So my mom started dating this other dude. She moved to the desert for him. And then my brother was born.
Uh-huh.
They had like a 20 plus year relationship, got divorced, and then cut to 5 years later are dating again. And it's the wildest thing.
Romance.
Whoa.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm unloading all of this in therapy every week.
Yeah. can I ask what ethnicity your parents are? Your biological parents?
Yeah. So we're Mexican American, but I specifically like don't use. I hate using national identities. So I've been like introducing myself as like, no, I'm Native or I'm Indigenous descent, and like really trying to understand and learn what that means for me and my family. So, like, for example, I know where my great-great-grandparents were born. I know what city in Mexico they were born in.
Mm-hmm.
I generally know, like, the region, like, the tribal region that's in. But that still requires a lot of, like, research into finding out, like, you know, what were the reasons they potentially left? What, you know, what does that mean in terms of like reclaiming identity? I brought this up on my podcast a lot, where it was kind of like, if you are a person with dual identities or a lot of intersecting identities, you often find yourself in the middle because it's like you're not enough on one side mm-hmm. and you're not enough on the mm-hmm. other side.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially if like you have immigrant parents and you suddenly find yourself in the States, mm-hmm. it's like you're not authentic enough to be wherever yeah. you're from. And you're definitely not American because yeah. like white supremacy has made that abundantly clear. So it leaves you in kind of this nebulous area of trying to figure out like, who am I and what does it mean to be what I am?
It's especially frustrating because unfortunately we're very visual creatures. And if you mm-hmm. lean towards like looking like a certain half of yourself and the other, that's what you get labeled as. Like yeah. Barack Obama is a good example of that. He's half white, but the way you present yourself to the world is usually what like people label you as.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe not is not even a conscious choice on your part.
Yeah.
Because people just want to put you in a box.
Yeah.
Growing up with so many not conflicting identities, but like so many, like of being a Venn diagram of something mm-hmm. and being like, why can't I just exist right here in the middle versus like needing to go to one side?
Yeah. I think a lot of it also has to do with the idea of assimilation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, that's kind of the expectation when, you know, our families moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm third generation. Like, my grandparents were born here. And if you go beyond that, like, California was basically Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
When I would ask about, like, certain things, particularly, like my grandparents and their parents, my great-grandparents, or, like, things that had happened before, it was kind of like, well, that doesn't matter because this is where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, like, the linguistic elements there, too. Like, a lot of third-generation people don't speak Spanish. And, like, granted, I've gone kind of full circle with it, where I was very, like, model minority in my early teens,
yeah.
where I was very much, like, distancing myself from other Mexican people. And I was only dating like white people. That evolved and changed as so did my politics. Interesting how that happens.
Mm-hmm.
so that, you know, all of that changed. And it was like, now I'm embracing all of these things, but I'm still, you know, not enough. So it was like, well, I need to dig deeper than that because Spanish isn't even our native language. So it's like, why the fuck am I beating myself up over not speaking it?
Yeah,
that's an interesting point. I feel like I also kind of did the same thing in the sense that I tried to move away from my like Persian heritage and culture because I felt like I wouldn't be, actually, you know, I wouldn't fit in. I was like, you just gotta assimilate ASAP. But mm-hmm. then like, I just kind of hit a wall with that at one point where I was like, oh, who fucking cares? Everyone sucks anyway. It's like people are going to make you feel one way or another no matter what, no matter yeah. how hard you try, yeah. no matter, you know, like what you wear. Like you'll always people will always find a way to other you because that's the world we live in. Like it's almost like a way we just try and make ourselves feel better. And like I'm guilty of it, too. Like I other white people all the time. but it's true. Like we find our ways where, you know, we're born and conditioned to have prejudice inside yeah. our soul and mind and body. You know, it's just the way it goes. You condition you basically have to teach yourself right, which is mm-hmm. unfortunate, but it just is what it is. You'll always, based on where you were born or how you were raised, you'll always have some negative feeling towards something or someone.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, to your point a little earlier on, I was just kind of waiting to get this out. I don't know why. I'm more of a listener at this point in my life. To what you were saying about, like, fitting in and just kind of, like, being in the middle and not being, you know, you just can't find your place exactly. Like, I struggled with that so much because, one, it's like, and this is also an interesting point to why, you know, you're not speaking your native or like just native languages in general.
Mm-hmm.
When I would travel through Iran, something that really bothered me was people who would be like, oh, you're from America, but you speak Farsi so well. And it's yeah. like, well, I'm fluent because my parents speak it at, like there was this kind of disconnect to me, like, yes, bitch, I'm American. Yes, mm-hmm. I can speak Farsi. Like, what's your point? Like, it would always annoy me. And then I, you know, like in Iran, people were like, oh, that's so cute. Like, oh, you're American. Wow, we would have never known. You're so good at hiding. And it's like, I'm not hiding. Yeah. I'm also Iranian. Like, this is just, it is what it is. I'm American and I'm Iranian. Whatever, move on.
That's so interesting to me that the idea, or at least the perception of like hiding. And it's like, in any other context, if, you know, it's not, I'm not hiding, I'm where I belong, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's never, I mean, to your point, Anna, I think it's like, you're never enough in anywhere you go. Like, I think that's why you feel so alien-like. I know I say that all the time, but it's true. Like in Syria, similar to your experience, I wasn't Syrian enough. I was always the American one. Here, definitely didn't feel American. So like, where do you go? Where do you belong? Mm-hmm. And that's more about nations and nationality, but ethnicity is a huge part of that, because especially when you're like ethnically ambiguous, it's, you're even more of
yeah. You said the title.
You're even more of this like unplaceable thing where people are like, what are you? And you're like, I don't know, actually, you tell me. going to tell me anyway.
I did have one instance where I really wanted to punch this older woman in the face. This is just kind of an aside in a way, but like my cousin's husband's mother. They'll never listen to this, so whatever. They live in America. She could not get over the American accent I have while speaking Farsi. And I mean, whatever, like I'm from California, like I speak a certain way. And this has never been brought up to me. No one ever really points out like, wow, you have such a like Californian accent when you speak Farsi, because no one really cares. If you can speak Farsi and you can get your point across, no one's critiquing you. But this woman would not stop being like, oh my God, that's so, and, you know, she's saying this in Farsi, whatever. She's like, that's so cute how you speak. Oh my God. Oof. Wow. It's just, your accent is so cute. And I literally, like, this is at like a holiday dinner too. So I was like, I will fucking smack you in the face with this bowl holding all these pomegranates. Like, I was so irritated. Like, I was just like, what do you want from me? Like, can't you just be happy I'm communicating to you? Like, yes, I have an accent. Yeah. I was born and raised in America. Like, what do you want from me? I can speak the language. I could have easily not been able to speak the language had I just been like, no, mom and dad, I'm speaking in English. But like, I made an effort all my life to continue to know Farsi and speak Farsi to my parents, because I actually like, I like talking shit about people in public. No, I'm just joking. But like,
that's a big part of it.
But like, it was just so irritating to me that she was just belittling me in this way. And this was like 2 or 3 years ago. Like, I was probably like 27. Like, you dumb bitch, I'm an adult. Like, stop patronizing me in this way. Like, I don't go like, ew, bitch, what are you, old country? Like, what is your problem? I'm sorry. I just hate that kind of stuff. It's like, no, just it's treat people appropriately. Like, you don't need to be acting like that. Ugh.
Yeah.
I hope she does hear this.
Little do we know, she's a listener. Yeah.
I'm going to hunt her down. I'm going to force her to listen to it. And then I'm going to spill, like you said, a bowl of pomegranates on her shirt. Like,
yes.
You so that's get that never coming out.
Yeah, that's not coming out. Mm-mm. Speaking of which, I want a pomegranate now.
Culturally relevant.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go back to you a little bit. I really want to get into where you currently are right now. Maybe we can get into that in the third block.
Eventually.
Yeah, but because I think it's going to be a longer story than I'm anticipating. But when did you realize that you wanted to be a performer and use your voice in a different way? I think a lot of people of color, at least maybe I'm projecting in my experience, there's like there's a lot of steps into finding that, especially when your identity is in question for a lot of your youth. For example, for like a lot of my work and a lot of my poetry, a lot of my films, I never really acknowledged that I was Syrian because I was just like, I'm not Syrian enough.
Yeah.
Did you have that with your pursuits?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. So to preface myself, growing up, I didn't have a lot of freedom or choice. Mm-hmm. The household that I grew up in was very much like, this is what you're going to do. And you don't really have any other say. Mm-hmm. So
same.
I can relate to that 100%.
Yeah, so it was like I grew up playing sports, not because I wanted to, but because it was like, you're playing sports now.
Yeah. I don't even know why I went to college. I don't think I wanted to at all. Like, there are little things like...
Sure.
Like, I thought I wanted to be a doctor for a minute, a lawyer, just because I thought that was what I was supposed to do. Like, you know, it's... I mean, I could talk... There are so many layers of the indoctrination of that and, like, feeling a little bit controlled in retrospect, but...
Where are you in the... Like, do you have siblings? Where are you in the
I'm the middle child.
Oof.
I know.
I'm the oldest.
In my family, my older sibling is like the golden child. She did everything she was supposed to do. She's a doctor, married to a doctor. As far as standards of beauty are concerned, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's lighter skinned than me, all this other stuff. You know, it's just like, I could never meet those standards. And I was the middle kid, and my younger sister was much more supported creatively than I was. So they fucked me up, man. Like, it was hard. It was hard.
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't be the artists that we are without trauma. I mean,
yeah. And I'm saying this as someone that, like, I love my parents more than any people in the world, but they also agree that I wasn't very supported for a lot of my life in the way that I needed to be. And that was only because they were doing what they thought was best as far as what they considered success to be and what they considered stability to be. And I think they also, a lot of immigrant families, a lot of people of color, parents, they don't know how to deal with mental health issues. And I was kind of that first child for them that presented so many. So I think there's a lot of reasons why I had the experience I did. But I do think, like, a lot of my humor, a lot of my art stems from a lot of things that maybe you can classify as trauma. And so it's like a good way for me to frame it that way as an adult.
Thankfully, like, we have the language and now are now understanding kind of the emotional and mental impacts being raised how we were raised has. Like, I'm super excited for when or if I have kids, like, being able to take that knowledge with them and then their children. Like, their children are going to be so fucking set in terms of being able to talk about mental health, talk about their feelings, destigmatize and process what toxic masculinity is, what, you know, that kind of internalized white supremacy is. Like, I'm super excited for them. Like, that's going to be amazing.
I'm excited too. I'm excited for you.
So I wasn't given a whole lot of choice. So when I did my first play in eighth grade, because I took theater as an elective, I stopped doing band. I was just kind of over it.
Whoa. Were you allowed to do that?
Well, it was like, I just didn't like it anymore.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to try something different.
Yeah.
I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea that it would, like, lead to anything. It was just, this is something different and I need a class. I need to fill up a class. So when I did my first play, I, like, got bit by the bug, as it were. And it was just like, oh my God, there's an environment where I'm the only person making active decisions on what I want to do. Even if it's in this controlled environment where you're given the script or you're given whatever, the materials or suggestions if it's an improv scene or whatever. But it's like, I get to make each and every decision for each and every single moment.
Mm-hmm.
It blew the doors off of anything that I knew. So after that, I played high school football for a year and then I got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But I started theater as a freshman, did it all the way through high school. Did every play I possibly could. And when the time came to, like, apply for schools and go to college and stuff, one of my teachers, amazing instructor, taught me a lot. She was really kind of pushing me towards a conservatory. And I wasn't sure that was what I wanted. One, because I was a fucking 18-year-old kid who, like, was just discovering, like, oh, you have agency now. Discovering what that is. So, you know, going fucking wild. But then two, like, not having anybody being able to guide me through the college experience, being like a first generation college student and not getting adequately prepared for, like, the applications or, like, the process of having to do all this shit.
Yeah.
And I remember just being so fucking frustrated by, like, FAFSA, by all these applications.
Oh, FAFSA gives me PTSD, even saying that word out loud.
Like, yeah, and, like, not knowing and being so frustrated, I still, to this, like, just bureaucracy, if there's anything that, like, sets me off, it's being inconvenienced by bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Are you my dad?
So, you know, so community college was a lot of fun for me.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I ended up wanting to go to the conservatory after I checked it out. I did a tour. I liked it, but my mom was like, I don't know, you know, you really should think of something practical. Mm-hmm. And I was getting that whole spiel. Mm-hmm. I felt deflated because I had won a couple of awards from like the Desert Theater Academy. I don't remember, but yeah. There's basically a board in the desert for all theatrical productions. They do community, they do professional, and they do like local and high school theater. And they like make nominations. It's basically like the Oscars for local acting.
That's cool.
And I had won a couple awards from them. And so I was feeling really, really confident. And I like got second place in this Shakespeare competition. And I was feeling so fucking good about like what I might be capable of. Mm-hmm. Only to like feel super fucking deflated by yeah. like, well, maybe you should do something practical.
I had a very similar experience. Long story short, before we go to the ad break, basically when I found photography and art in high school, I was obsessed with it and I loved writing, but I like basically lived in my high school's dark room for the last two mm-hmm. years of high school. And one of the most pivotal moments for me was getting a 5 on my AP photography like portfolio. I was really, really proud of that portfolio. And I really wanted to go to art school. I really, really wanted to go to art school. And my parents kind of shooting that dream down of like mm-hmm. the same kind of like, it's not practical. I really want to go either to Chicago or New York. And I was only allowed to apply to schools within California. And this is, I'm very privileged to have gone yeah. to college. I really recognize that. But that lack of agency, it really resonates with me, your story, mm-hmm. in a way that like the highest, most proud moment I felt as an 18-year-old, 17-year-old with that portfolio was completely irrelevant because yeah, I couldn't like do anything with it.
Yeah, it's like the biggest and most pivotal moment for you, it's like you still hit a ceiling mm-hmm. that prevents you from like finding out what's beyond that.
Yeah. I had this dream in my head of being this artist, and maybe there's a timeline in where I was more like where I did do that. But I don't know. It's a little bit tragic in retrospect, but it did make us who we are. And
true story.
Yeah. We're going to take one more ad break. We'll be right back.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
This summer, click into Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot and get after those outdoor projects with some serious cordless power from Ryobi. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. Leaves and debris are no match for the 40-volt power of the Ryobi leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Tidy up those flower beds and keep your walkways looking sharp with Ryobi's 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Yard work. Done and done. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at your cordless power source, the Home Depot. Shop now at the Home Depot or homedepot.com. How doers get more done.
Okay, we're back. I'm curious, you mentioned how you're excited about your children and your children's children being more well-versed as far as toxic masculinity is concerned. Is that pursuit, does that influence why you have a podcast called Mansplain Yourself?
Yeah, so the idea came around. I was having lunch with a friend of mine who's a trans man, and we were talking about experiences, how, you know, we kind of became who we were. And he's the son of Sri Lankan immigrants, and he had found himself, or at least American identity, through hip-hop. Oh. And we were talking about that, and 2 hours went by. It blew by. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, we probably should have recorded that. That would have been a really interesting podcast. And that idea, that seed had been there for a while, and I was trying to get him on board for a while so we could do this thing together. But fortunately for him, he's an awesome comedian, actor. His career had started taking off. He produced a one-man show in New York. So I asked him, like, hey, I still really want to do this thing. Would it be okay if I, like, took the ball and ran with it? He's like, yeah, of course, please. Like, go. I think it's a great idea. Run with it. And at the time, like, I had nothing. So I was working nonprofit work, making fucking minimum wage or making very close to it. I didn't have a computer. I didn't have a mixing board. I didn't have microphones. And so my goal at that time was, like, let me save up enough money to be able to get these things that I need.
Yeah.
And it honestly took about a year and a half for me to get in a position where, like, I could start doing this stuff. And I met a guy who ended up being my producer for it, David Robinson. He was like, hey, man, I run a political podcast. I think your voice is really necessary and awesome. Would you want to be a guest? I was like, yeah, sure. So I went and checked out his setup. He had a great setup. And I asked him, I was like, hey, how much would you be interested in producing anybody else's? And he's like, yeah, yeah. So we worked out something. And that was where Mansplain Yourself started.
Nice.
Literally out of his apartment.
Wow. You never know who's going to help you out. You know, you never know.
Yeah. Granted, I haven't been able to record an episode this whole time, dealing with a lot of shit outside of COVID. But I'm really excited. I have 10 episodes that I have yet to release that I'm going to release hopefully soonish.
They're going to be bangers. I can feel it.
Yeah. But the core idea was just, like, whether we talk about it or not, all of us are weighed down by the expectation that has been placed upon us to, like, behave certain ways, to do certain things. And those can be, like, self-imposed, or they can be placed on us by, like, our, you know, parents, loved ones, caregivers, all that kinds of stuff. So the idea was, like, I want to talk to people who have kind of figured it out, or at least are in the process of figuring it out.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them, like, one, what sucked about it? What have you learned since then? You know, how have you kind of grown into the person that you are today? It's important not just to have visible men doing quote unquote good work.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to also talk about the shit that we're ashamed of and the shit that we're not proud of, and to take ownership of it and be like, hey, so this was me being a 20-year-old fuck up. Here's what that looks like, but here's what it did for me, and here's why I'm doing the things that I'm doing now.
I mean, that's accountability is, like, everything at this point. Like, truly, like what we were saying earlier about Kamala Harris, like, if she truly just came out and was like, this is where I fucked up. This is where I let my own, you know, whatever that was guiding her, like, kind of take over what I could see beyond, like, right or wrong. Like, just, like, say it. Just say, like, this is how I was being shady, or this is how I just, like, was being ignorant. Like, I just didn't know. And now I do know, because I learned, I listened, I read a book. Yeah. I don't know. I read an internet article. I read a blog post. I don't know however people learn. I don't learn, you know, whatever. Twitter. Yeah. I read a tweet.
But I mean, accountability is huge. Yeah. And especially when you recognize you come from a place of privilege, which is like being a cis man, you know, like that's a point of privilege, and you've benefited from patriarchy and all of that.
Yeah.
But to kind of similar to white people needing to undo white supremacy and recognizing it, the people that benefit need to be the ones to reconcile and recognize how they benefit from whatever it is they benefit from, so we can like move forward. It can't be on the shoulders of women and or people that aren't men, you know?
Yeah.
So I really appreciate that you had that initiative to make that podcast. And I'm excited to see the episodes that are going to come out. And I mean, this year has been a journey, to say the least, for every single person. I'm excited for it to come, your podcast to come back. But you also shouldn't, I mean, taking a little hiatus, that's self-care.
True story.
Yeah.
It feels weird to like accept praise for it because it feels necessary.
We also get praise for the show. When we didn't really set out to be pioneers, it just so happens to be that way.
Yeah, I just feel weird, like it feels like a thing I should be doing.
Yeah, I can see that. I still think it's cool. Whatever, I'm gonna praise it. Okay,
we still think it's cool.
But you gave us a little nugget before we started recording, but tell us where you are and why you are there.
So right now I am in Portland, Oregon. A friend of mine asked me fairly recently, would you ever consider being a sperm donor? And I had to take some time with that question. I was maybe projecting a lot of my own insecurities into this thing because of a lot of the things that I experienced with both my biological father and my stepdad. And I needed to really kind of reconcile, like, what is being asked of me here? And two, how do I see myself participating in this thing, or at least supporting this thing in a way where I'm not getting in the way of what needs to happen? And so she's not pregnant yet, but the mom and I have had a lot of conversations. We've talked a lot about it. And so ultimately, based on those conversations, I decided to say yes. So I flew up a couple of months ago to make my donations. And this month they're giving her my samples. So they're, you know, turkey basting her.
Inseminating, is that what it is?
Yes, inseminating. But I got to go with the funnier
right,
phrase.
Of course. I understand.
So she asked me to be there with her. So I'm up here chilling for a couple days. Our appointment is on Saturday. So it's a weird and really interesting thing to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like, you know, we're not in a romantic relationship. So the idea of having a child, one, scares the shit out of me. But like, it's almost easier in this context because the door is being left open for me in a very like, you know, let's both understand that like this is her baby.
Mm-hmm.
But if there is room for you to be a cool uncle if you so choose.
Yeah.
And for me, like that doesn't set off my like, my internal sort of like, we need to panic, we need to panic, mm-hmm. we need to panic.
Yeah. I'm, as someone who's terrified of, I've always been very afraid of the potential of being a parent or motherhood. I don't think it's for me even now still, even though everyone's like, you'll feel different at XYZ age. Didn't happen. It still terrifies me. So I don't think it's for me, but the fact that your friend thought of you and was like, yeah, he is someone that I want this to be like, I'm trying to find the words, but I think it's amazing.
It's creating a bond that lasts as long as, you know, that, that lasts a lifetime. I was really flattered that she would ask, you know, we both run in the same queer POC circles. So a lot of the men that she knows are HIV positive. So the option wasn't there for them to donate. And so, and maybe because I have poor boundaries, I don't know. But for me, I try to operate under, if I have the ability to do something for somebody, I don't feel obligated, but it feels like an easy yes, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that has anything to do with poor boundaries. Because like, I mean, boundaries, that, I don't know about that. Because, you know, you've clearly spoken to this person and you know this person. And if Like, I don't know. I struggle with that even being like a boundary, because it's a choice you two made together to move mm-hmm. forward with. So it's like, I feel like putting like being like, oh, it's poor boundaries. Like, I don't know. It kind of like, you don't need it. That's, to me, it's like, okay, if she was being like, I need you to have this or whatever, like give me your sperm, I'll have the baby. And then if she came back after and was like, and I'm going to need this much money from you and then blah, blah, blah. Like, then it's like, oh, you're crossing a boundary, because that's not what we discussed. But yeah. I feel like looking at your friend and being like, you know, we have had conversations about this. You know, we have decided to go through this together and we understand our like game plan, if you will. That doesn't mean you have poor boundaries. It just means that you have come up with a plan that you feel good with.
Well, yeah. I don't mean specifically in like this context. I mean, just like in general with how I like... It's like, if I have the capacity to do something, I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that's poor boundaries either. I think you're a smart guy.
I mean, that has led to a lot of interesting conversations and my therapist recommending Brené Brown. So there's something
nice. Why do we always come back to Brené Brown? That's every therapist is like, anyway, I think I'm done here. You should check out Brené Brown. Because my therapist has literally said that to me. And I was like, bitch, what am I paying you for? Why do you just go suggest I go talk to, or not talk to, but like read and listen to a self-help expert? Like, why don't you do it? I don't know why I'm triggered by that.
I can relate to like the gist that you're saying. Like, I have no filters, and I think people can misinterpret that as a lack of boundaries, but I really think it's a strength. I think maybe you and I, maybe we're talking about the same thing here, but I hate this phrase, but wearing your heart on your sleeve. Like, I think that's like kind of the same idea as having no boundaries, having no filter. I used to think it was a weakness when I was growing up.
Well, that's how you're made to feel that it's a weakness.
You're made to feel it's a weakness. You're made to feel you're too sensitive or whatever. But the older I get, the more I realize it's a strength. And people, the candor that we have is so valuable. And I really cherish this part of myself now that I used to really try my best to turn off. Mm. And I don't think your friend would have asked you if you didn't have that quality about you. Like, you seem like someone, even though this is like the first real conversation we've had, you seem like someone who wears themselves very authentically in the world, you know, like this is who you are. And I don't know, it's refreshing because especially in this industry, there's such a facade everywhere. Yeah. And so I appreciate the way you operate, because I think a big part of why we've been able to talk for over an hour very candidly about so many other things is because you present that to the world and you like invite that kind of welcoming conversation and like aura. So I think that's probably why your friend thought of you for that. The more I think about it, and maybe I'm coming to the conclusion as I'm talking out loud, but you know what I mean? Like,
Thank you for saying that. Like, I definitely try to put that forward. The way that I have kind of come to that is like, I spent so many years in self-loathing and spent so many years like chasing approval that I wore myself out, you know, and you kind of like, you hit a plateau where it's either you're going to break or something else is going to break. And I hit that point and I had to fucking change.
Yeah.
And so I definitely saw the benefit of like you said, like being more hard on your sleeve, like being very just sort of like, I'm not playing a character here, or I'm not like trying to be cool or trying anything in particular other than like trying to be more sincere. Mm-hmm. I think sincerity is cool. Yeah. I think liking the things that you like, you know, I don't believe in guilty pleasure. So it's like, oh, this is my guilty pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like, no, if Disney musicals are your guilty pleasure, fucking enjoy it.
Yeah.
Don't apologize for those.
Take out the word guilty. Just pleasure. You know?
Just pleasure. Yeah. Cause it's like, we were all taught at a certain point socially that like some things as adults you should be embarrassed of.
Right.
And I don't want to operate that way.
Yeah. I think especially as people of color, back to a point we made earlier, we have this ingrained, white supremacy, but also colorism, that like whiteness is the ideal. I should strive to be that. I should strive to date that. I should be attracted to that. And I think that also plays a part in it. Like, I love Arabic music. Sometimes when it would come on in public and people would like react weird to it, or at my parents' house or whatever, I internalize that. And like little, I remember those microaggressions very well. But I think a big part of embracing ourselves is realizing like, yeah, just it's the prejudices we have against ourselves is something we have to undo. And when we do that, it's going to be like a lifelong process, but like we'll be better for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There are a lot of rewards in being genuine, in like being visible. I worked at the LGBT Center during part of my time in my 12 years of nonprofit work. And the thing that pushed me to like, one, come out, and two, sort of embrace not my sexuality, not just my sexuality, but like my, how I wanted to present and how I wanted to exist, was being around kids. Like these were teenagers. These were 14 to 23 year old kids.
Wow.
And so some of them, you know, some of them were trans. Some of them had been like kicked out of their homes. Some of them had run away. Some of them, you know, didn't have any other safe place to go where they could be who they were.
Right.
And being around them, it was kind of like, these kids have risked absolutely everything to be the most genuine version of themselves. Me being like in this comfortable space, why can't I do that?
Yeah. I think coming from a place of authenticity and embracing that is a journey. And the fear, at least for me, is when you are that open, you have the risk of being taken advantage of, and people, people kind of, especially, I mean, I guess it's in across industries, but especially when you're queer, when you're a person of color, when you're just trying to live your authentic self, you get taken advantage of, for lack of a better word, and recognizing that the good is worth the bad and staying true to yourself is ultimately the journey of this life. Like, I don't know if you know anything about, I'm obsessed with Carl Jung, and individuation is something that he talks about a lot, where it's like the whole purpose of life is to become the person that you're supposed to be
I love that
boil
idea.
It down very simply, but I believe that 100%.
I didn't know that was Jung, but now I that is exactly what
I would strongly recommend looking into individuation in particular, as far as he's concerned. I really like his interpretations of dreams as well, as far as psychiatry and psychology is concerned. I just really got into psychology and psychiatry as a kid and a teenager because I was struggling so much and I wanted to understand it better. And that kind of led me down the rabbit hole of Jung and like really as an adult reading so much of his work. But in a lot of ways, we are the only constant in this in our lives. And maybe this is coming from like someone that's been perpetually single for the majority of my life, but like we're always going to be our best partners. And we have to be kind to ourselves to be that good partner. And I don't want to be a partner with a fraud. Even though I feel that way a lot, I have imposter syndrome all the time, but I'm working on it. And I want to be the best partner for myself. I want to be the best version of myself for me, not for whatever fucking person.
No, I see where you're coming from. And I honestly, I appreciate you being that willing to kind of open up and share that. I definitely relate to a lot of what you said. And, you know, there's been plenty of memes, but it's like the most important relationship that we have is the relationship we have with ourselves.
Exactly.
And like, that doesn't mean that those relationships are perfect. I mean, you still struggle with things. I still definitely struggle with things, but it's like, we're learning how to have those relationships in a way where we're not like impeded by those things, but we can still like, live our fucking lives and go on our day to day, because there are plenty of things that I can dwell on for like days or weeks if I let myself get there.
Yeah. You're going to have to come back, because we talking to you is so easy and so lovely. Thank you so much for coming onto the show, sharing your story. I can't wait to have you back and talk more. Until then, where can our audience find you on the internet and otherwise? Where do you live? Your social security number?
My blood type. So I am on all the social medias under just my name, so Derek Lemos, two R's, I-C-K, like oil derricks, and then Lemos, exactly spelled like lemons, but no N.
And where can people find or request sperm? And I'm just joking. Sorry.
Oh, wait. Mansplain yourself.
I was going to say that probably Tinder would be a good place.
Oh, perfect.
Or Grindr.
Oh, hell yeah.
So for some reason, the older episodes aren't showing up on Apple Podcasts, but I do have it listed on SoundCloud too. All 23 episodes are currently there. Going to be uploading 10 more soon. And I'm launching a new podcast very, very soon. But I have to get all the like artwork and social media stuff set up for it.
That's very exciting.
But it's going to be a whole lot of fun, completely different, and very much just centered around like, let's talk about art. Let's talk about movies. Let's talk about this thing and how we can kind of give our own little spin on it.
That's fucking cool. I can't wait. I cannot wait.
Check it out.
Yeah, check out Derek's handles on everything. We'll have them all linked below, obviously, in the show notes. But listen to Mansplain Yourself. Catch yourself up before the new ones come out. Yeah, you're a joy to talk to. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sharon. Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time to do the show.
Yeah.
I know you're busy. Busy man.
And have a good time in Portland, man. Like, this is a pivotal moment for you. Like, this is, I mean, I think it's really cool what you're doing. So live in the moment and recognize how pivotal it is for not only you, but for your friend. It's really cool to talk to you.
Yeah, no, just thank you both. Like, we've been wanting to do this thing for a while, and I'm glad that we finally got to.
Yeah.
Long time coming. I'm singing.
No, I should have cut you off. I love your singing.
Thank you.
I remember when I remember when Star Is Born came out, you were really into singing the song from that movie, and I made my life complete every time.
Tell me
what if I really could hit it?
I hadn't watched it literally until maybe this year, so you singing it was always the only thing I knew about the movie for a long time.
The part where she hits that part, if you know what I mean.
Yes, exactly.
I wish I could hit those notes.
Yeah, don't we all?
Every time I hear it, I like tear up a little. I'm like, damn. There is a video. Go look this up of a fucking Lady Gaga acapelling it at the fucking script read of A Star Is Born. And she's like, and this is like kind of where I would do a little bit of this. And then just acapella singing that song. And everyone's like, dude, what? Yeah. And I'm like, well, what'd you expect when you had Lady Gaga in the room?
Yeah.
Talent is talent, baby. That's
you wouldn't
me.
Know about
I'm
that.
An agent, so I'm like, talent is talent, baby. Okay.
Okay. That being said, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter, Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram. I'm Shireen, Shirohiro on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
I'm just at Anna Hosting on Twitter.
Woohoo! Until next time, I'm serious. Listen to Mansplain Yourself. Thank you so much, Derek.
Thank you.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.